and welcome back once again to Railway Mania. I hope that you are all keeping safe and well. This interview is with Callum Wilcox and Adam Ashford. You may remember them from episode 9 of the podcast when we talked about their experiences on the Great Model Railway Challenge. There are hundreds of railway YouTubers out there and more joining all the time, with many more people wanting to get started, but perhaps not sure how to go about it. So I thought it might be a good idea to speak to two people who have been doing it for many years. I wanted to talk to them about how they got started, how their channels have evolved, and their outlook on the future. This interview was recorded in the autumn of 2019, long before any thoughts of quarantine. Callum has since started a new job working for Pico and Railway Modeler, so is pretty much living railways 24/7 now. As always, I hope you enjoy it and it provides some entertainment, especially during lockdown. Callum, Adam, welcome to Railway Mania. Now, for anyone who's not watched your channels before, what kind of videos are you putting on there and what could one expect to find if they look for them?
So my channel is the SDJ RSNF 88 channel. It consists of mainly model railway videos and projects and tutorials, but also real and preserved railways as well. So it's a bit of a mix.
And then, so Adam, your channel, it's mostly focused on real railways and preserved railways. Is that correct?
Yes, it is mostly real railways, preserved railways.
How did you make your start putting railway videos onto YouTube?
Well, it sort of started off as let's see what happens, really. We have some friends over. We were running the model railway at the time. And he brought his camera over. And I thought, well, why have you got your camera over? And he goes, oh, I just wanted to take some pictures of the trains running. And there was a video mode on there. And anyway, he hit video mode on one of them and we filmed a train going by. And we said, well, what could we do with this rather than watching it just on the camera? And then I thought, could I use that footage and stick it on YouTube and see what happens? So we then set up all these camera locations, and sure enough, we filmed a couple of trains passing. And I put it on YouTube, set up a channel, called it SDJ RSNF 88. I thought at the time that that'd be quite a appropriate channel name, purely because it was my favourite engine. And two, I thought because it says SDJ RSNF 88, it's a bit like almost like a gamer tag in a way. So I thought I might hit it off of a few other people. So I popped that on there and I expected a couple of views. But by the end of the week, it had over 100 views. And I was like, wow, people are really interested in this. So I then bought a camera and started making videos pretty much ever since then.
How long ago was that?
That was, oh, blimey, it must be at least seven, 8 years ago now.
And how about you, Adam?
Kind of the same, really. I remember getting my first digital camera back in, 2006, I think. And I just filmed odd clips at railways that I was going to. I think the first one I did was at the West Somerset 40th anniversary S&D gala.
So that dates it.
Yeah, that dates it very well. And I don't think I did it straight away. I think I did the odd video at random railway visits during that year. And then come the October, I believe it was, I'd set up a YouTube channel and just uploaded these random little clips. And that was pretty much how it stayed for about 2-3 years before I discovered Windows Movie Maker.
We all made our start with Windows Movie Maker.
Still using it.
Where would we be without it? Yeah. Where would we be? Because you stuck with your name, Callum, the one you chose at the beginning. But Adam, you changed your name.
Yes.
What was it originally?
Originally, the only ads rules. Because it's the email address you make when you're like 13 because you think it's cool.
Yep.
It was the only ads rules. Then it changed to the really snazzy TOAR Media. Slamdoor Media came after that. And then 82A Studios, which is what I am now.
And where does the 82A Studios come from?
My birthday is the 8th of February, so 82. A, it's obviously my name. It so happens that 82A is Bristol Bath Road Shed.
Oh. Because I assumed it was just Bristol Bath Road Shed. I didn't realise there was a personal
link. Even I didn't know
you
that.
Just found that out?
Yeah, I was like, wow, there's a lot more trivia to this. It's like a Cornetto trilogy here. Like trivia.
Yep, there's so much more to it than just Bristol Bath Road.
Yeah, the thing about names is that when you're young and you choose one, you think, oh, you know, this isn't going to last forever. I stuck using the Ginger Mafia as my email address for several years, so I can relate, yeah. So, Callum, how did it transition from being the occasional upload to something you wanted to treat more professionally with regular video content along a distinct theme?
Well, I mainly started the channel while I was doing my exams at sick form by doing a couple of running sessions. And these running sessions, I could only really get around to doing every couple of weeks or so. So I then went through a couple of my cameras that I already had, and I sort of compiled slideshows together of preserved railways, and they seemed to also do pretty well. I went on about doing weathering. I was doing some weathering at the time. I was learning how to weather rolling stock. So I put together a little tutorial on how to do that. And again, that started proven quite popular. And then I looked at really what was trending with the model railway community on YouTube at the time, which was reviews seemed very, really popular at the time. They still are, but there's a lot of work that goes into them, and these reviews were really what catapulted my channel to where it is now, the real sort of starting block. These reviews were starting to get four figure views on them, and I was like, oh well, wow, this is really, really good. People really want to see these latest models. So as soon as I get a model, I then review it. I don't really do them as much now, as there was so much effort and faff in a way to do these videos. And yeah, I would love to, but I sadly don't really have the time to do
that.
And
the expense as well. I mean, you have to buy these models a lot of
the time. Definitely.
I think a lot of people think that people get gifted them to review, but a lot of the time people are actually funding it themselves.
No, all of my stuff is funded by itself. And if I need a bit of money, I'll sell on some other stuff. And that's how it works. The way the interest in the hobby has changed is along with the channel. So I mainly model World War One now, and of course I still have a soft spot for the S&D, so I still have all that as well. But mainly I focus more on the modelling aspect of the channel now, so fitting sound into my locos and filming them running, but also, you know, building layouts. And again, building layouts has been another thing that's really catapulted the channel. I mean, looking at the analytics, when I started Compton Martin, which was my first exhibition layout, which I only used once, I had to actually create the Compton Martin Model Railway exhibition to display it because I couldn't take it anywhere else. And then it was built over the course of about a year.
So, did you construct an exhibition around your layout?
Yes.
Right. I think that's a first.
But through the power of YouTube, all the exhibitors were YouTubers which hadn't gone to exhibitions themselves. So again, through the power of YouTube, we constructed this, where your friends that I made even this short time on YouTube then came together with their exhibition layouts and what they wanted to show to create this event. But that layout was constructed over the course of a year, and it's only been to that show and it's never been used since. And that was all for it. But people loved seeing the weekly updates on that layout being built. And that was another thing that then boosted the channel even further. And then we've had ones with like Compton Quay, and of course Amiens 1918, my current World War One layout, and then a couple of micro layouts. I even did one for Hornby back last year. And they seem to really captivate an audience. And it basically is a way to show people how to create their own model railway.
Mm. That's great. And also it's really interesting that you kind of made your start by looking at what else was popular and seeing how you could emulate that and also put your own spin on it, but then went down your own path with the building of the layouts and everything. And it's a story that people can follow.
Yeah.
And also what you say about community on YouTube, I think is really important, because like you say, all those people were YouTubers that you had at your exhibition who wouldn't have been able to go to an exhibition or wouldn't maybe felt confident going to an exhibition on their own dime.
And many of those people I had never met before. I just knew them through YouTube. I didn't even know them by their real names, half of them at the time. Of course, I do now. It sort of developed from there. But Adam as well. I wouldn't have known Adam. There was a chance to meet at a gala somewhere, I believe. Very, very early on in my YouTube career, definitely. But we sort of ran into each other on the end of a platform. And of course, I said, oh, yeah, are you filming on YouTube or something? Or one of us said that question. And then, oh, yeah. And then, of course, we mentioned our usernames. Oh, so you're that guy's videos who I watch. And oh, you're that guy's videos who I watch. It's really interesting, because then that way you then meet people like you wouldn't run into normally. You wouldn't assume.
Yeah, and especially with like gala videos and stuff, because very rarely do you put yourself in them.
No.
Whereas your presenter-led videos that you do, like when you're building your layout, it actually features you.
Yeah.
And so people can recognize you, but otherwise you're just a username.
Yeah. That's another funny thing as well with the way that YouTube works is I sometimes feature myself in videos, as does Adam as well. Basically, people see you, so they know precisely what you look like. So if you're at a gala, they'll come up to you and go, oh, it's nice to meet you. And the funny thing is you'll be standing there going, I don't know who you are. not in a rude way. And it's not in a rude way. You want to know who they are. But then they'll mention their username. As soon as they mention their username, because the first thing that they'll do is they'll mention their real name. And of course, on YouTube, that often doesn't mean anything. But then someone will go, oh, you know, class 37, da 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 da. And you're like, ah, yes, you, yeah. And then you sort of, it's a lot more easier after that. But yeah, it's great. But that's how you sort of end up getting to know each other. And it's a brilliant community out there, really. And that's what it's all about. And that's what drives me on YouTube is this sort of community. And you're creating enjoyment for people and getting to know people that share the passion for this great hobby, I think.
So Adam, was it a similar story for you in terms of putting regular content out? So you're saying you started with the occasional thing, but then when did you decide that I'm going to do this all the time?
Oh, I never really think I said I was going to do it all the time. I think I hit when I kind of maybe definitely wanted to keep it going properly, probably around 2009-10 sort of time, when I got a proper camcorder. Well, and sort of graduated from this little point and shoot camera up to an actual proper thing. It's like I made a conscious effort to chase rail tours and go make sure I went to preserve railways and film videos, and my desire to chase rail tours has slowly waned over the years just for the pure effort of doing it, and the fact that I don't drive when you have to rely on the main line to get you to places isn't always good.
Not always so reliable. Have you noticed any patterns in videos that performs better? And you've touched on this, Callum, with your layout build videos and also your review videos. But I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I was kind of thinking that if you just film like a diesel cold start, you're pretty much guaranteed about 10,000 views on that video at least. Is there anything that you've been surprised about, like a smash hit that you didn't think that would perform better? And is there anything that you make that you know is going to perform well when you make it?
Seven Valley Railway Gala videos.
All the time.
Pretty much constantly. We'll constantly get you like a few thousand views. Doesn't matter what.
I don't know. I don't know, but because some of the videos that I've gone to great lengths to do, like ones that I've been really, really passionate about, ones that I would enjoy watching, seem to get a good number of views, but then they sort of peter out. Well, some really, really random videos do extremely well. I think the best video in that case is actually my highest rating video on YouTube, which ironically started off as the lowest rated video on my YouTube channel. I basically was doing my exams at the time, and I didn't have much time to create content. So I started cobbling together videos from footage that I previously had. And one of which was my actual A-level photography project from GCSE, which was I created a music video to The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel, showing the closure of the railways and the beaching act. So I went to preserve railways and I filmed videos and took pictures of preserved scenes in steam, and then went to the abandoned railway link between Radstock and Froome, which is all the tracks still in place. There's even an abandoned wagon halfway along near Mells. And I basically took a picture from a similar angle and then I faded the two together. So you have the picture of a preserved DMU going by on the Avon Valley Railway, and then you have the shot of the cutting on the Radstock to Froome line with the abandoned track all overgrown.
So it's like a before and after kind of thing.
I couldn't upload that as it was because it was Simon and Garfunkel. We all know the issues with copyright. The 50th anniversary of the beaching cuts was coming up at the time. So I rehashed it all together and I just basically let the sound of the locos play that were in the footage. And then I edited just bird songs, which I recorded in the garden, over the abandoned scenes, and I cobbled it together, put it up online, and called it 50th anniversary of the beaching cuts. And it sat there about 17 views, doing next to nothing. And then all of a sudden I started getting comments, and these comments, I get these comments at least one every week. In fact, recently it's had quite a spike in comments and I don't know why, but these comments are quite funny because they're very politically, obviously it's quite a political subject, it's a very controversial subject. Some of these comments are quite out there, and so I choose not to reply to most of them.
It's an emotional subject.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very emotional subject. But that video went from 17 views to, I think it's well over 60,000 views now, and it's still growing, and it's really, really weird. And people are going, oh, that's a preserved railway, and you know that's not a real thing. I was like, but sadly I didn't live in 1960.
Yeah, and I didn't have an HD camera.
Yeah, and also I couldn't take footage from anywhere else. So I made this, it's basically an art project, but it's really, really funny how people have taken it to heart.
It's almost a tribute.
It's a tribute video, that's what it was. And it's just really, really funny. But I, like I said, back to the point, I wasn't expecting that video to do well, but it's now my most popular video. It's really, really surreal seeing this abandoned, rusting brake fan at the top of my most popular video list. It's really, really weird.
YouTube also rewards you for success. Yeah. So when you've got something that's... they like the snowball effect, don't they? They like something that's already very popular to pump more views into it.
Yeah. One of my other videos I did recently was the Pershing Baldwin, where I built a World War I Pershing Baldwin. I spent 4 months building that loco. Every step of that build, I would record me doing what I was doing, which, you know, when you're trying to build something, it's you just want to get on and build it and just relax and build it. And yeah, I'm going to do that more often now. But I thought, for the benefit of YouTube and the guys wanting to know what I'm doing, I'm going to film it. And it is stressful making sure you're not blocking the camera. You're trying to glue something to something, but you make sure it's on camera. You make sure you're going to get it right, but at the same time, the viewers can see it as well. And it took me about 4 months to create this video, and it's online and it's doing well, but it's about, I think, about 1,500 views. Yeah, and you think with the amount of effort you put into that video, you were hoping it was going to do a bit better. But that's the thing. You know, some people were into that thing and some people are not. But those are the sort of videos that I would view personally. Yeah, it's just one of those things. You never know what's going to be popular. But as you say, some things like diesel starts and stuff like that tend to be quite popular, or videos with like thrash in the title, or in your case, train crash.
I saw that is so Adam's most viewed video is train crashing, which has 50,000 views, and it's from 12 years ago.
Yes.
What was your motivation behind that video?
To crash a train.
It's almost a bit of a surprise success. In a way, an inverse effort kind of thing. Like, the more effort you put into something, sometimes it doesn't have the results you want, and then something that, I'm not saying you didn't put a lot of effort into that video, Adam, but
I can imagine the amount of effort you put into that video.
Oh yeah, lots of effort into that video.
But so. It must be the keywords or something like that.
Probably. Probably people searching for trains crashing.
That's
a key. Is probably why it's so successful. When I was still at school, one of my mates said, "Oh, you should just do a video of some model trains crashing." So I was like, "Yeah, all right then." So I filmed it, uploaded it. There you go. I'm done with it, and it's turned into my most popular video. So
all these professional shots of preserved railways, and then you go into the view list, and then at the top video, Smokey Joe crashing off the end of a baseboard or something, is it Smokey?
Yeah, it's a Hornby D-Class pulling a brake van or something, crashing into a Lego man and then into the camera.
Classic.
Yeah. Well, you go look at my second most popular video, which is the Severn Valley Railway Autumn Gala video. It's got like 40-something thousand views. But at the engine house at Highley, they had music playing in the background. And I thought, probably won't be a problem. Probably won't pick up on the video, blah, 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 whatever. Edit the video together, upload it, and then get hit with a copyright claim on it. I was like, what? I looked it up. I was like, what is this? Why? Why are you doing this to me? It was racking up all these views. I'm like, well, I can't delete the video now. It's racking up all these views. If I do delete it, re-edit it to take out that bit, and upload it again, it won't get the same number of views, probably. So there's no point. So I was just resigned to it being this one video that's probably is now my second most successful video, that thankfully now has shared revenue on it, not just YouTube taking all of it.
Yeah, because YouTube changed the rules recently on music copyright that they can only claim for the percentage of the video that their song is used in. I think they can only claim the monetization of that.
Oh,
so
really?
So I think that the way they're doing it now is, instead of, oh, you've used my music on your video, I claim the monetization on that video. So I claim all the ad revenue from it. They look at the percentage of the video that the song appears in, and then they apply that to the monetization that they receive.
That does sound better, because that has always worried me, because you know, you hear these stories of people's videos getting taken down because of copyright claims, and more often than not, it'd be something as like standing on the line side and a car goes by with a stereo on a bit too loud, and you get like a really key point of the song, and of course YouTube just goes, yep, I recognize that. You put that in your video. Like, no, a car just drove by behind me. I don't want him to be there, but there's a train in front of me.
Yeah.
That's what I'm filming. And it's quite a touchy subject with all YouTubers, I think. But
And it's the problem of being beholden to essentially an AI.
Yeah.
It's not a human on the other end saying that you've infringed copyright. It's something that's auto-detecting, because they have so many users and so many videos that they have to police.
They
could never do it with humans in charge.
Yeah.
So they have to rely on the computers to do it. But then again, people lose out because of that.
Yeah, I'm always very, very cautious of it when at galas and stuff, and especially right around the engine house, as we all know. But
yeah,
I've
more or less steered clear of the engine house ever since.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Oh, just run into the cafe. Could you please turn your music off? We're trying to do some filming.
So why do you do this, and what's your motivation as an individual for this?
Because that's not a difficult question.
What do you get out of it?
Enjoyment in some form or another, because there'll be a lot of the time you're going around with your mates and just have a bit of banter and have a good time. That's the main reason for doing it now. The social aspect, yeah. I don't get as much enjoyment if I'm not with at least one other person anymore. It's kind of like, well, I'm here, yay.
And is that one of the reasons why you want to do fewer mainline chasing ones, because you're often on your own?
Kind of, but I think, again, that was partly down to the effort of planning out a mainline chase. I have done it occasionally since, not very often though. Yeah, the social aspect is definitely a big one for me now. I mean, I have considered occasionally just stopping doing video, but also you get the occasional shot. I was like, "Oh, that was a really good shot. I'm really happy I recorded that." You can go back and watch again. It's like, yeah, I really like doing that.
Mm. So is that like a sense of professional satisfaction at having done a good job?
To a certain extent, yeah. But then there's also, with my other YouTube channel that I'm filming for, there is a certain, requirement for me to get those shots. I think, yeah, certain professional satisfaction does help as well.
And how about you, Callum? What's your motivation to keep doing YouTube videos?
Well, it's pretty much the same as what Adam has discussed there. It's like, again, with Preserve Railways and stuff, you know, I find it only really enjoying when you're there with your mates going around filming it. You know, like, say, that's mainly part of the day. I mean, if you go around and look at these videos, you've got like you might get about a 20-minute long video from a gala. But you got to remember that 20 minutes worth of footage has probably been recorded over 8 hours of the day. You know, you're spending the other 7 hours and 40 odd minutes doing hopping on trains and banter and larking about and stuff. As for model railway videos, I tend to film pretty much when I do something with model railways. I don't really tend to use my model railway much without a camera being there. I think I just like to share with the community. In a way, the online friends you sort of have, if that's a simplistic way of putting them, because you know that there might be someone that would, you know, enjoys watching your videos and you would hate to let them down. So I always think of it that way, that, you know, that someone's getting enjoyment out of it. And there's some times where you do film videos, you're thinking, why am I doing this? But then you log on and you'll check a comment and you'll see that it's made someone's day, and you think, that's why I've done it, is to make someone's day and to, you know, inspire them to have a go, basically.
What I wanted to say was, do you still get a buzz from people experiencing your videos, and what kind of interaction means the most to someone who's creating videos on YouTube?
I would say that comments definitely, you know, you get all these nice positive comments about saying, oh, look, maybe someone that was also there. More often than not, you get quite a few comments going, oh, I was actually standing beside you while you were doing that shot of the 4MT passing at that said location. You know, I didn't realise it was you, or something like that. But, you know, mainly it's just like, oh, that was great. You know, it was, you know, thank you for sharing this with us. You know, quite a lot of the followers I've got on my channel were from the other side of the world. So you've got like Australia and America. And it's great to, you know, because obviously it's a bit of a way for them to come to experience something similar. But also as well, in their countries, we're very, very lucky as a nation to have so many preserved railways on our doorstep. And, you know, to them, that's a luxury. I know there's one chap that I talk with quite a lot in Australia. And he goes, I mentioned that I'm going off to the Seven Valley Railway Gala. And he goes, oh, how many engines are going to be in steam at that gala? And you're like, oh, 12. And he's like, we're lucky to have 12 locomotives in the space of so many 100,000-mile radius
in the country.
And you've got them all on 16 miles of track.
I mean, that's the same case in Ireland, because when we went over in 2014, wherever it was, and we were chatting with the guys there who run Strad Bally, they've got more engines at Didcot, not in steam, than they do in the whole country. And that's north and south of Ireland. So it's like, yeah, I think we're doing rather well in the UK.
Well, those countries never had the equivalent of Barry Scrapyard.
No.
And they never had some sort of mass preservation movement.
No. Yeah, I think we got very lucky in the sense of people who want to preserve steam engines, and the fact that we had at least one, i.e. Barry Scrapyard, that had the impetus to say, oh, I can make a bit of money out of this sort of thing, rather than just cutting them all up and making less money.
Well, if you look at what arrived at Cashmore's and how long it stayed there, it was days, hours, I think. They arrived and they basically went straight through the cutter.
Yeah.
And whereas he held on to them for however long? 20 years sometimes,
some
I think.
Stupid. I mean, I think the last thing that left Barry was 1990. Ooh.
It was quite recent.
It was the last 10, wasn't it?
The Barry 10. Until for quite recently. I think the last one that officially left Barry Scrapyard was in the 90s sometime.
I think which is amazing. That's something like nearly 30 years after the end of steam.
Yeah.
That he's held on to them for, and everyone else is just slicing them into bean tins. Yeah. What means the most to you when someone... Is it comments, when someone comments on your video, that means the most to you? Or is it likes? Or do you like watching the view count? Or are you just doing it for yourself?
I mean, I think now I'm doing it mostly for myself. I think I've reached an age where I don't really care what people think to a certain extent. I do get a little bit disappointed when a video doesn't hit so many views or something. I think, oh, that probably could have had a few more views on it or whatever. You know, say at the end of the day, I'm doing it for me. I don't really need to worry about what other people think. So like maybe 3-4 years ago, I probably cared a bit more. But now it's just all me. I don't care what everyone else thinks.
I think someone was saying recently that it used to be that the internet was an escape from real life, and now real life is an escape from the internet.
Yeah.
So I think maybe, I think as you get older, you somehow spend more time in the real world, and the internet isn't so important anymore.
I've been trying to find that analogy for quite a while. That's a very good one.
Let's talk about monetization, and we've touched a bit on copyright, but have either of you monetized your channels? As in, do you earn revenue from adverts displayed alongside them?
Yes.
Yes.
And what are your thoughts on YouTube's monetization? Do you think it's fair? Do you think you get fair recompense for the views that you...
I think YouTube as a site is one of the only sites where creators can create content and get paid for doing it. And it's very, very good at that. And I know there's a lot of controversy over monetization and stuff. And there are some channels, some that, you know, that we're talking about, not railway channels now, we're talking about, you know, gaming channels. The ones, the big hitters, like, you know, the top YouTubers in the world. And they... You can only imagine what money they get. Everybody assumes that you have adverts on your video, you get a lot of money. You don't. I mean, I like to think of it as a little reward at the end of the month, or maybe 2 months, if it even reaches that much, if you're lucky.
When you're getting ad revenue, does it build up over time and you can only withdraw it when it gets to a certain amount?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's set to dollars or something.
Yeah.
Generally, it's when you hit $100 in terms of revenue. I mean, it's the equivalent of about £60 or something.
Yeah.
Then you hit that at the, but you accumulate it over a course of a few months. Then once you hit that, then it automatically pays out.
It's one of those things, really, because I do videos, 3 videos a week. That's what I'm running at the moment. It's every 2 days I tend to post a video. That's a lot of videos. And you're looking at some of the top YouTubers, they may be lucky to post a video once a week. But I tend to do it pretty regularly because, you know, I enjoy doing it. If you add up how much money you spend and time you spend creating those videos, you will know that you're not making a profit on any of this. You're basically getting a little tiny bit of money back to help you create the next month's videos. But we're talking, if you add it all up, I mean, like a Seven Valley Railway Gala video, right? You think about it logically, it's to drive from Bristol to Seven Valley, that's about £15 worth of fuel. Then you'll have breakfast probably on the way up, say another £5. You probably get something to eat up there, it's another £5. Then you've got the gala ticket itself, which for me this year, because I don't get priv rates, was £36, I think. Nearly £40.
So you're already at, say, £60 that you have to make back in ad revenue to even break even on that video.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I'd be lucky to earn something like that a month. And so that's one video from a month's worth of videos. So you're talking, what, you know, say 4 weeks in a month, you know, 3 videos a week. That's at least 12 videos. And of course, if you did something similar to that for every video, you'd be at a dead loss. So, you know, it's the reason why we do it is for the passion of doing it, you know, to meet up with friends. It's basically our hobby at the end of the day. And, you know, to get a little tiny bit of money back at the end, it's just a nice sort of, it's almost like a little thank you. It feels like a little thank you. And, you know, all it is just a little ad that pops up on the video. And I know that some people really, really rage about adverts popping up on videos and stuff, saying, oh, I can't skip it. It's like 20 seconds long and I can't skip it. But then you think about TV and you're thinking you got about 5 minutes worth of adverts between quarterly during the video. Then you think that, you know, you put a 20 minute long video online, you put one advert in the middle, and then loads of people go, whoa, my goodness, there's an advert here. But you watch a TV program that's a similar length and it have like 5 minutes of that as adverts.
I think a lot of the time, because people are so used to getting something for free, that they are very negative towards having to pay for anything, even if it's time or anything. You've experienced this with quite a lot of the big channels, like Slash Drive moved from being a completely free YouTube channel to having a paywall in it to access certain episodes and things like that, and the amount of rage that they got was ridiculous. But you think, you've got to pay these guys to make this stuff, this is their full-time job.
Yeah.
And you're contributing so much of your own money to make these videos that is then being enjoyed for people. And if it's 20 seconds of their time out of a 20 minute video, like you say, why can't they just chill out about it.
Yeah, but thankfully I don't have, not to my knowledge, that anybody complains about. I think everybody that watches my videos is very understanding, and you know, I always watch other people's videos and I see an ad pop up, I always like leave it on and watch it, because I know that I go, yeah, because I know that they've done a lot of hard work to create this, to give me this enjoyment to watch this video, and that's the way I think of it. And you know, like I say, at the end of the day, I work a normal job as well around this. I mean, I create my videos in the free time. It's basically my free time. I think pretty much all my free time is dedicated to creating videos. And you know, I just enjoy it at the end of the day, and that's why I do it. I don't do it for money, you know, views or revenue like that. It's literally just the enjoyment of doing it. And you know, if you get a little something back, it's just like a sort of a nice little thank you. It's almost like a little sort of pat on the back. Thank you very much.
I think that 3 videos a week is quite a lot for any YouTube creator. I think even the people who are doing stuff like daily vlogs have a production team behind them a lot of the time, and anybody who's monetizing that kind of thing certainly does. So I think 3 videos a week is, like, in terms of people who often create videos for YouTube, that's high.
Yeah,
I think that's a high output.
It is. In many ways, I will spend my days off like compiling loads of footage which could be changed into a couple of different videos. So I like doing sound edits, and you know, my viewers seem to quite enjoy these videos, and I've had a lot of comments about the amount of time and effort that I've put into timing the sound of a real recording that I've recorded at a preserved railway to my model of that said locomotive, and I make sure I've got all the beats of the revolutions to the wheels correct. It takes a lot of effort to create a short little video, but people enjoy that.
I think there's often a perception that being a YouTube personality is easy because of the way technology has evolved. Phones have HD cameras on them now, and everybody thinks that, oh, you can just whip out your phone and film something, and they see these runaway success stories of people who have got, you know, a lucky hit in, and are suddenly like, you know, back in the day it was Charlie Bit My Finger, and then sometimes it's like a friend of mine did a video of a spider walking across a piece of paper and got something like 4 million views out of it, which is ridiculous.
Wow, I see that every day in my bedroom. Maybe I'm filming the wrong thing.
But in my experience, being a regular content creator is actually like a lot of your time. And so you're saying that it takes up probably all of your spare time and all of your sociable time. Is it the same for you, Adam?
No.
What kind of output do you search for?
I attempt for a video a month. Well, especially since I started this new job last year, I don't get many Saturdays off. The aim of trying to get one video out a month is probably the best I can do. I do try and get more out when I can, but obviously it depends on what events come around at certain times of year and what annual leave I can take. I definitely wouldn't say it takes up a lot of my spare time. Certainly the YouTube part of my hobby doesn't take up anywhere as much time as it does for Callum.
And it's really interesting something you said, Callum, about filming, working on a model, because I found that doing something is fine and it's nice and relaxing, like you said, but doing something and then filming it, it suddenly becomes almost a stressful experience and it takes 3 times as long.
Yeah.
Like any... I marvel at people who are able to just churn out... If you look at something like Marty's Matchbox Makeovers...
My friend loves those videos. I mean, they're brilliant.
He's just knocking them out all the time. And it's like... How? I don't understand. He must have just have a formula down.
Yeah.
And he's so used to doing it now. And I just find everything takes so long.
Yeah.
And I've got builds, like you say, that are lasting months instead of days.
Yeah. I found this with... Because I've... Since the Pershing Baldwin video went out, I've started building... I really enjoyed building the locomotive, cameras aside. I enjoyed building the locomotive itself. And you've created something that's personal to you. And I found that really, really enjoying... myself, and I thought, well, I'm gonna try and do a lot more of this, but without the camera. So I've started 2 other locomotive projects which are currently underway, and I've done a load of renumberings, and you know, I'll post the results as a video. So I'll show a video of the train running once it's complete, and I'll take pictures at every stage, possibly maybe doing a slideshow and then doing a bit of a voiceover saying, well, this is what I've done, this and this is how I did that, and I've done that on a recent video, and it's proved quite popular as well, and that, but without me having to make sure I wasn't elbowing a camera or something behind me at the time. Yeah, the enjoyment of actually trying to put the locomotive together, I really enjoyed. And this locomotive I'm currently building has taken me a couple of months, and I've just took a couple of snaps when it gets to a certain point. And yeah, it's just more enjoying spirits. And you look at the thing you've built and you're like, I built that. And I will be able to share it with the people on YouTube, but not necessarily in as great a detail as I would like. But it's more relaxing in that sense, because at the time with building models, even without a camera over the shoulder, it could be very, very stressful, especially when something doesn't go quite right.
And I think it's more likely to happen when it's on camera.
Definitely.
As soon as you look at something, it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I found that I almost felt like I was playing a video game because I was watching my hands on a screen, and it kind of felt like an out-of-body experience because, are they in frame? You know, have I got it lined up properly? Or I'm doing a piece of work and I was doing some sanding and I realised it was completely off the edge of the screen.
Yeah.
So then I had to go back and sort of do it again to make sure
it's
on the screen.
That's what I had to do. I had to do that with the Pershing Baldwin quite a few times.
Yeah.
Where I drilled out the buffer beams and then I was like, I didn't film that. I'll just drag it in. I'll just turn the drill bit in the hole.
Something that you've touched on already is that when you generate a following online, one can often feel that they owe their subscribers a lot of content, despite it being available for free. Do you feel pressure to keep generating video in order to please subscribers? Do you feel the pressure of your audience's expectation of seeing your videos, especially if you're making regular content?
Sort of and sort of not. I'm one of those people that hates to feel like they've let someone down. And in all aspects of life, you get that sort of situation where you've got to say no. And I'm not very good at saying no. I'm one of those people that will keep on doing it until I'm pretty much run flat out, completely livid, and I end up, you know, having to sit down for like a week or something. In my line of work, I get a lot of that. Exhibiting layouts, I get a lot of that as well, which, you know, again, is part of the YouTube thing. And of course, doing the videos, it's part of a lot of that. But basically, I'm one of those people that can't really say no. And like, you get to that point where you're like juggling seven different things and you're like, oh, what takes priority here? Part of me niggling would say that people might be upset if I stopped posting videos for a while. But at the same time, the majority of people would be very understanding. And that's what I hope they would be anyway. But having met quite a lot of these people in the flesh and, you know, over at shows and exhibitions over the years, I would say definitely it's the latter.
Well, because I've worked with a few YouTubers in my time, and I think a lot of them are almost in a permanent state of stress at having to make the next video and having to please their audience a lot of time.
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced burnout, or has anyone you know on YouTube ever experienced it, and how did they deal with it, or how did you deal with it?
I've known a couple of our friends have stopped doing like videos for a bit of a while, and then it takes a bit of a while to get back into the swing of things. With me in particular, I think I've posted pretty much constantly since the channel started. I haven't stopped, so I've not experienced a bit where I've not done a video for like 2 weeks or something. I've never done that on the channel. So I'm at that sort of stage where I'm thinking, what happens if I don't do it? Will it all of a sudden just wither and die? So it's one of those, that's an extra worry as well. But yeah, I definitely feel that. You it gets a bit too much. And thankfully, normally I'll go through my backlog of videos that I've already edited. I'll set that to on schedule or something. And yeah, that will give me a day or two to have a little think.
And Adam, so you said you've recently gone, as you've gotten older, you've recently become more mindful of yourself and what your own enjoyment is of the channel and making videos for YouTube. But did you ever feel beholden to an audience?
Difficult to say, really. Looking back on it, I probably not really. But I don't know if that's just... I would say I've not had the same sort of success as Callum's had.
Well, I don't know. Train
aspects.
Crashing is pretty successful.
It's up there with my Beach and Cuts
I think,
video.
Yeah, they are crying out for a sequel to that.
Train Crashing 2, 4K edition. But I wouldn't say I've ever had the sense that I feel like I need to be producing content to keep my viewers happy. To a certain extent, I'm going out and enjoying myself and doing this because I want to be doing it. I don't think I've ever... Or I kind of just pushed it back in my mind because it's too of a harrowing experience or something to bring back up that I've ever felt beholden to my viewers. It's not really something I've ever really thought about.
Mm. Yeah, it's really interesting because you've both, like, you've got successful videos and you do both do regular content, but both in a completely different way and for different reasons. I mean, Callum's pumping out like 3 a week and you say like you've never stopped.
Yeah.
And Adam, I say your content has quite a lot of variation to it earlier on, but now you're doing more gala videos and sort of coverage of real railways. Was that a conscious decision to move towards that kind of thing?
Certainly in the model railway aspect of my channel is kind of like, that was more or less conscious decision to stop doing that because I just didn't find any enjoyment in doing it. I know that Callum has kind of taken on that burden of filming my layout for me.
Yeah, we're up to 4 videos as of a minute ago. We've just been around there filming another running session and confusing my followers as to, is this a new model railway that I've been building, which quite a few people have assumed, even though it does say AC2A's model railway.
Callum, how about for you? Like, if you felt that one aspect of your channel you weren't enjoying making anymore, do you think you could cut it off, or do you think you would be disappointing people by doing that?
Well, it's a good point, because it's like the reviews. The reviews are basically, people keep on asking me for the, you know, occasionally, but ask, oh, are you going to do reviews again? And that is one video that I would say that I've pretty much cut out of my channel now. The effort to, you know, I might apply the effort to have another go at it at some point. But those videos are sort of gradually faded out over time. The reviews were getting more and more complicated, and people enjoyed that. But the thing is, it was getting to the point where I was doing it taking 2-3 days to edit it. And then by that time, it would take another day to upload it on my crummy internet. And then by the time it was uploaded, about 7 other people had already uploaded a review of the same model. And it was like, and then no one would really end up tuning into your review because someone else had already done it. And yeah, I felt a bit better once I cut those out. And now I still technically do reviews, in the sense that I'll get a new model and I'll film it running as soon as I get it, and I'll do close-ups showing the detail, but I won't do the audio, because basically with models it gets quite repetitive, especially with the standards of models now. You'll say, oh, it's got separately fitted handrails, but pretty much if you watch back every review I've done has a model with separately fitted handrails, and you realize you're just repeating yourself.
And also, what kind of spin can you put on a review? I mean, if it's a good model, then generally it will get good reviews. Yeah. What can you do that's different to everybody else's one?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, I know that there are a couple of my friends review model trains. They're very, very good at it, and their channel is made around reviewing model trains, and he does a great job at it. And you know, I got to that point where I like, well, leave it to him, because he does a great job at it, and he's very, very honest with his reviews. And it's, you know, when you get something new, it's hard to, you get attached to it, and you think, you know, can I really say something bad about it? Unless it's really, really bad, of course, and you do get those. But most of the time when you get something like that, you don't want to film a video of it, because you're so annoyed yourself. You're thinking, I don't want to film myself being angry on camera. But there's one chap that does a great job, and he's very, very honest. And if something goes wrong on camera, he completely owns up to it, goes, look, this happened, you know, this is very disappointing. And you know, I'd rather leave it to someone like them, and you know, then I could focus on doing modelling projects, and you know, I get more enjoyment out of that at the end of the day, and hopefully my viewers do as well. So it's a win-win, really.
One thing that gets talked about a lot in regards to YouTube content creators is churn. Because people feel the need to get regular content out, sometimes they'll chuck something out that maybe isn't of the same standard to others. And have you ever found yourself doing that, or have you ever made the decision to do that or not do that? And what do you feel about people who do that?
I in saying that, with what I've been doing recently, there's been a lot going on in my life behind the camera. Basically, I find that I've been doing that a bit recently as well, to keep up with the regular content on my channel. And really, I should just lower the amount of videos I do. Then again, my videos in general have never really, I feel personally, as we touched upon earlier on, I still use Windows Live Movie Maker, which to anybody that edits videos, that is like, how are you even doing that?
Don't knock it.
Yeah.
We all started somewhere.
But I've still stayed at that level. That's the thing. I've stayed at that. All the videos that I've created on my channel have been created using Windows Live Movie Maker. Even the sound edits are created in that. And I know that a few people are like going, how have you done that? Because you can't overlay audio in Windows Live Movie Maker. I was like, I found a way, and it's very, very stressful, but I found a way, and that's the way I do it. With Windows Live Movie Maker, you're very restricted in what you could do anyway. So even my best edited videos are not as professional as what they could be, I would imagine. I mean, you look at some of the other YouTubers, they got all these snazzy fades and pan rounds and videos and stuff while they're talking. And I know with their editing software, they can literally pile all that in and it will create a great video. With Windows Live Movie Maker, it is an effort. And in some cases, it will destroy the footage in the process of doing it, which is even more annoying. Most of the time, my videos are to a standard that I'm pleased with, but I know that they're not as high a standard as they could be. Some videos, like I say, just be reeled out. Other ones I spend a bit more time in, but I could still, if I put that bit much effort in and, you know, bought new software, I'd definitely need to buy a new laptop, because my laptop is ancient. Yeah, I probably could churn out videos to a much higher quality than what I do at the moment, but I guess that's the thing for my channel. My channel's always had this sort of level of video, so it doesn't really make much difference, really, to me.
And Adam, how about you? Like, how do you feel about when YouTubers maybe churn out things that are not subpar, but maybe not up to the same standard as some of their other stuff, in order to fulfill like a requirement to put videos out regularly?
I kind of always think quality over quantity is where you should be looking. And I know that some other YouTubers, Callum not included.
I feel that was a little dig.
Well, churn stuff out that's like slightly less good to keep the views rolling in, keep subscribers rolling in, this sort of thing. But at the end of the day, if your quality is good, people go watch anyway. Doesn't matter how many videos you put out. If the quality is good and have a high standard, people will come back again and again to keep watching. I would always value the quality over the quantity any day.
Mm. I would agree with that statement. Apart from, I think, some people appealing to an already engaged audience. So people with large subscriber bases can afford to leave big gaps between their videos. If you look at, for example, Richard on Everard Junction, who does have big gaps between his videos, and he does one whenever he can fit it in, but he does have a large subscriber base, and I think that's harder if you're just starting out. So even if you put a lot of effort in, if no one's tuned into your channel and is subscribed to it, you might find it harder to get going. And so that's maybe why some people feel like they have to keep putting stuff out in order to build a subscriber base, and also the fact that the algorithm seems to change all the time anyway in what it recommends to people and how it chooses what videos to recommend to people. So I think you're right. And also, Callum, I think that what's in front of the camera is often more important than how it was made. So I mean, you're saying that Windows Movie Maker isn't like the top editing program, sure. But I think that as long as what you're filming is good, it doesn't really matter how it was technically made, what camera it was shot on and everything. If it's entertaining, it's going to be entertaining anyway. I would say that for anybody who wants to start a YouTube channel, don't feel like you have to have top equipment, like big DSLRs and, you know, big IMAX and stuff like that to edit on.
It's precisely because, like I say, I'm still using that stuff now to where I'm to now. I'm still using pretty much the same, well, everything laptop and software-wise is still the same as my first video. It's just I've gradually upgraded my camera, but I haven't upgraded it to like a was it 4K camera or anything. I would love to one day, but I mainly held back because of my internet connection. But at the same time, it's, I guess in a way that's sort of slightly encouraging for my videos, is that people could watch that and go, well, wow, he's managed to do that using that software. And like I say, with those sound edits, everybody always asks what editing software that is. And I say Windows Live Movie Maker, and you always get like, wow, I've got Windows Live Movie Maker for free on my laptop. And you're like, yeah, you can do it. It just takes a bit more time, but you can do it.
Yeah. And actually getting around technological limitations actually, I think, makes you a better filmmaker anyway. I'm not saying that I'm a brilliant filmmaker, but back in the day when I used to use Windows Movie Maker, I was trying to find workarounds for stuff that just didn't exist in the program. Like when you have to re-export things, bring them back in, apply an effect to them, export them again, put them back in again.
That's how precisely how I do the sound edits. And yeah, that's done two or three times before it's then edited with the title and end sequence before it then gets uploaded. So it's gone through the wash, say, about four or five times. So yeah, to like a 2 minute long video takes about a day to make. So
yeah, because I think it was like that you had a big limit on how many audio tracks you can put on anyway, so you have to do like a dialogue pass and then a effects pass and then a music pass,
because you can't even overlay two videos in it. So you have to get your footage that you want to make the audio, turn it into an MP3 in a separate bit of software before you could then put it into the Windows Live Movie Maker. My Windows Live Movie Maker is the older one, so you can't see the peaks in the sound file. So you have to literally just drag. See, I can see the look on your face now. You're thinking, you're going, wow, this guy's definitely committed to the cause here. But yeah, I have to literally drag that footage inch, millimeter by millimeter on the screen until the wheels and the rods line up. It's basically you can't see it. You just got to guess where it goes, and then you just look at that connection in the rail and you see the wheel touch it and you hear the thud and you go, yeah, that's in line, right, edit it, don't corrupt. Which more often than not it does. You get to about 99% and they go ding.
I got a Mac.
Yeah, people look at us with our Macs. I have so much sort of like admiration for you using Windows Live Movie Maker. About 3 or 4 years ago, I had to try and edit a video because I forgot my Mac for this event that I was at. And I was like, oh, can you just edit this video on my laptop? I said, yeah, sure. What else? I think Windows Movie Maker. I was like, right, okay. I legitimately couldn't use it because that's how long it had been since I'd used Windows Movie Maker. I was like, how do I use this again? So I was like, no, I can't do this. Have that back. Because it had been like 4 or 5 years since I'd used it. I was like, get so used to a certain editing software, a way of doing things. And it just, you have to unlearn that process to get back to what it is you're doing.
See, that's what I'm really worried about, is when I finally do actually get around to getting a nice editing software, which will make my life so much more easier. I'm going to be like, how do I do this? It's going to be just like a big wall of buttons and effects and stuff. I'm like, wow, that's going to do that, and that's going to do that, and that's going to be that.
But I think that's actually true, in that the more professional piece of software can seem so daunting, because you can click a button and everything can mess up and you don't know which button you clicked. And yeah, and trying to dig it out, you need to know the actual term for what you just did in order to find the fault. When I took my first steps into using, say, non-linear editors instead of Windows Movie Maker, it was terrifying. And I made mistakes all the time, and I ruined clips and had to get rid of projects and restart them again because I didn't know what I'd done. So actually keeping it simple might be the biggest advantage. Maybe I should switch back.
Trust me, waiting 45 minutes for a 20-minute video to process, with the potential it might corrupt halfway through 3 or 4 times while you keep on hitting it.
Should we put a link to Callum's GoFundMe for a new editor?
Yes, please. Please. I've never used anything like that before. I'd be interested to see who might get 1p. I'm like, yes, I can buy something.
What are the most common questions you get asked by people about running your YouTube channel?
It's mainly the questions I get asked is, how, what did I do in a video? Or like, how did I do that technique? Or how did I edit that together? Those are sort of the questions I often get asked. Or how do I get to a certain location on the preserved railway for a certain shot I've done?
Thinking about platforms, what are the advantages to YouTube's platform over posting videos on Facebook, do you think? Why YouTube specifically?
I would say YouTube is more tailored for videos in general. It's definitely, it's designed as a video website. Facebook is one of those things that it's constantly adapting to what it wants to become. So it's obviously started off as, you know, a social media platform in that sense, but then they've obviously realized videos are a big thing, so they've sort of added that on. It's like an added extra in a way. It's like, you go for videos, the first thing you go for is YouTube. It's that sort of platform. It's, you know,
Facebook is certainly in a way kind of like, we don't want you to leave.
They want to keep you on the platform as long as possible.
Yeah,
don't they?
Yeah. They want you to share your memories, every single daily activity on Facebook, and all these different videos that you're with, whatever it is you're doing. I mean, they own Instagram now, don't they? So even that part of sharing your life is technically being shared on Facebook. There's a certain extent that YouTube probably doesn't want you to leave YouTube, obviously, because there's a pro to keeping you there, whereas Facebook is like, well, you're here already, so you may as well upload here. So, and I know that people have said to me, certainly in the past when I was still doing my vlogging thing, don't underestimate uploading to Facebook, because you'll get a lot of stuff from uploading there as well as YouTube, so don't underestimate it. So I mean, yeah, it may be seen as kind of like trying to take over YouTube in a sense, but it shouldn't be underestimated.
Obviously, Facebook's trying to wrest a lot of video control off YouTube at the moment. Like, some of the high-hitting YouTubers are being offered cash to post their videos on Facebook instead by Facebook, because and I think Facebook's only recently started to turn its video platform into an ad-based platform as well. Certainly on our side of the industry, we saw the views you're getting on Facebook are ludicrously large compared to the views you got on YouTube. Then when you realise that they count them in a different way, and that they use autoplay to get around certain things, like, did someone actually like interact with your video and things like that. But I think if you're chasing views, then you just post them on Facebook. I think the main problem is that there's no archive facility. So it's so fleeting. It's here today and it's gone tomorrow. And I think that's a big advantage of using YouTube, is that I can flick back through your videos or your videos and look at, like, what were the previous steps in this process? When you're building this model, like, what did you do before this? What was last year's gala like? I can look at that and I can use it in a sense more like using the television in the olden days, I was going to say, or looking back through your video collection. Whereas Facebook is, you know, you might put a lot of effort into something and in a week's time, no one will care.
Yeah, I'm always going back through YouTube and looking at videos that are, you know, we've done in the past. Especially when it comes to like gala videos, it's really interesting looking back and seeing like something like the Seven Valley Railway Gala, when like the first one I attended, I can't even remember when that was, and seeing what locations we went to back then and what locomotives were there, And it, yeah, it's always part of the fun, really, looking back at what you did in the past. And that's another way I like to think of doing videos. It's sort of documenting what you've done. It's always great to look back and think what you've achieved in the past.
Because you forget so much.
Yeah, and yeah, you do. And and it's there, and you go, oh, wow, I did that. And I remember feeling that sense of achievement when I built that or when I filmed that.
We touched a bit on monetization. And so several hobby-based channels are able to help support themselves using Patreon, where viewers can voluntarily give money to content creators they want to see more of, which enables the creators to spend more time and money on making the content that the viewers like. And what are your thoughts on this, and have you ever looked into doing it?
I have never looked into doing it personally. I know that there are a couple of other channels out there that have done it, and to great success. And it does make me think sometimes, going, is that an option to do? Because it's a lot of money to create videos. There's no doubt about that. We discussed this earlier on.
Do you think that it would make you more reliant on your audience, and would that be a problem for you?
Yeah, I feel it would be. I mean, I think it's as stressful as enough as it is. With monetization, the viewer is not paying for your content. It's the ad that goes on the video that they're watching. The only thing that they're contributing is the couple of seconds of time that they are watching the advert. If someone's then giving you physical money, saying, look, here's £10, thank you so much for creating these videos, I would then feel indebted to make the most out of that £10, then give back to them. I'd feel bad if they gave me that money and then I created a video that wasn't good. I'd feel bad for doing that. I feel passionately that I want to create something that I enjoy and that what people would enjoy. It's that sort of attitude, really.
Mm.
I think it certainly depends on your subscriber base. If you've got the subscriber base to justify it, then yeah, by all means, go for it. There's channels out there that are making it work for them and that can run completely off of the revenue from YouTube and Patreon. All credit to them, they've pulled it off.
And I know that some people approach it differently. I subscribe to a few. Bad Obsession Motorsport gets a few dollars a month from me, and I quite like that I get to see the episode before everyone else. Like, I quite like being part of that exclusive club. But then again, I also respect people. For example, Blind Boy, who does a podcast as an Irish guy, he says everyone gets exactly the same. Doesn't matter if you give me money, everyone gets exactly the same. If you want to give me money, that's fine, and I appreciate that, but you're not getting anything else that other people aren't getting. And it's just a different way of doing it, and I respect both approaches, and I think if you're really passionate about something and you want to enable them to do more of that thing, then I think that's great. I quite like Patreon's approach in that it basically creates free time for people because they're able to do less of their day job or feel less pressured about doing their day job in order to do the stuff that's entertaining. But I think, like you say, Callum, you could end up with a situation where you're beholden to your audience and you rely on your audience for your income, and certainly it might suck the fun out of it a little bit.
Yeah, and then also, like, I would feel indebted to them.
Back in the day, my company used to offer this thing called seeding as a service, which was our way of getting videos that we made in front of the right target markets, which was usually by getting them posted in the right places, like on forums and blogs and news websites and that kind of thing. That's died away with video ads now, because you can just pay people to view your ad now through YouTube and stuff. But for user-generated content, I think that we all do quite a bit of seeding, which is, we post them on forums, we post them on relevant Facebook groups. For example, on an average video that you post, how many sites and links are you posting them to?
I post them in two main places, but three if you include YouTube itself. So YouTube, it appear up obviously to my subscribers and of course on YouTube. Then I share it around on various Model Railway pages on Facebook. And then also on RM Web in the appropriate topic. So if there is a topic on there about the new ROD, Batman ROD, which has just been released, I obviously share my video of that model on that topic. And people go, oh, it's great to see a video of the model running rather than just a still image, which is often posted on RM Web more often than not. But those are the only places that I would post it. I haven't really shared it anywhere else outside of those two platforms.
When you're looking back through analytics for your videos, how much of your traffic source comes from doing that seeding?
There's not really much of a difference. There's a couple percentage, but the main bulk of it is just through the subscriber basis on YouTube, which is nice. It knows that it makes me feel like I've got a loyal. There is a loyal following there that knows where to look, and they come back, which is I guess a nice way of thinking about it, really.
And Adam, do you notice any uplift when you post videos to other websites?
A little bit, yeah. I think I have occasionally forgotten to do it. And then done it a couple of days later, and then by that time if said event was on the weekend and you've posted the video like halfway through the week, even though you uploaded a video like the same weekend and you've only shared it on Nat Prayers or something, in the middle of the next week, you think, oh, well, I've probably lost out on a few views here.
So is that an issue for you when you're covering almost current events with your channel? Is there a real drive to get it out in good time?
To a certain extent, there is, yeah, because there's always people, say for a four-day gala or something, you go on a Thursday of that gala and you post the video that night. There's people already searching for it. At the time of recording, there's a video I did this weekend that I still haven't uploaded, mostly because I've been ill. And I know that I probably lose out on video on views on that video because I haven't posted it basically straight away.
What do you think is it about gala videos that appeals to people so much and that kind of thing? Do you think it's people who are unable to attend can feel like they're a part of it?
To a certain extent, yeah. I think it's also nice for people to see, where, say, when an engine in a certain livery visits another railway that has the correct type of coaches for it or the correct type of rolling stock for it, then you haven't been able to get to that event, but you're able to relive it in photos and video and say, oh, that looked really good. I really, really wish I could have gone to that.
And I mean, that's something that, you know, in the olden days before YouTube, it would have been looking in magazines for coverage. And it's something that you can almost live through now because you get the sound and the sight of it in motion. And the only thing you're missing is the smell. But it's only a matter of
sometimes
time.
Sometimes that's a good thing.
Adam, if you had to name three railway YouTube channels to follow, what would they be?
Speed to the West, Christian, good friend, and the Clay, Chris, EG Media. Steam Locos in Profile is the main program coming out of EG Media, which I'm involved with. It's been called Top Gear for Trains. And lastly, probably have to say Max, Terry55 Stepney. Do really enjoy his vlogs. He does pump out some good original content in the Thomas side of the fan base as well. So it's always a good watch, his channel.
Callum, what would be your top three railway YouTube channels?
Well, I like to watch all different model railway videos from all different categories, and you know, so that each one is unique. So one I would start off with is, if any of them is watching this, they would probably, but there are so many that I watch, but to name a few, so you have someone like New Junction, does modern image how to's, exhibitions and stuff, and a load of his friends as well, and they know who they are. There's so many, but there's a whole group sort of around New Junction, and all of them are great people. We've met them. We met them at Worley. We beat them at the Worley Challenge.
Famously,
which was, I was like, wow, that we couldn't believe that. But yeah, so that sort of genre. Then you got people like Sam's Trains, different sort of audience. I mean, his videos are aimed at getting younger people into the hobby, and that I think is a great format on YouTube, is getting a younger audience.
Something that he said, it was actually in a comment that I thought was really interesting, that he almost intentionally reins it in to make the trains that he represents achievable.
Yeah.
So for the younger modeler who does just have their trains on the carpet, that's why his trains are on the carpet.
And I know that when he started off, everybody was criticizing him because he was running trains on the carpet. And then when they realized that the audience that he was aiming at was completely different, then people sort of went, we all started off by running trains on the carpet. And clearly, the reason why he's kept his is because he wants to show people that you don't have to have a physical setup that needs to be permanently for people involved. Because if you just say, no, you can't have a model train set because you don't have a baseboard, then that's half the people in the hobby gone straight away and not going to come in through that door. So that's another reason why I choose him. Oh, I know it would be a good one to just mention. Well, like a manufacturer one. So something like what Hornby are doing at the moment, that'd be a good one to add on, because again, that's completely different. Manufacturers like Hornby who are doing it from their point of view as a manufacturer.
And also Rapido's pretty good at that.
And Rapido are very good at that. I mean, they're very, very, they add a whole comedy sketch to their work as well. And it's great to see that. And Hornby seemed to have really come out of nowhere with their social media recently. And it's really, really good. And it's really captivated, especially the younger part of the audience. And it's great. And the way that they actually interact with their audience as well. And that's great to see it from a manufacturer is actually, you know, who's providing the product for their customer has gone, YouTube's a big basis for people watching videos. Let's get involved on this and let's encourage people to check out all those channels that have done this. But at the same time, you know, show that we're here as well and, you know, to inspire another generation. I think that's good. So you got professionals, you got people getting people interested in the hobby, and then you got the manufacturer side. So I think that's my three choices anyway. I think that's straight down the middle, because I do tend to watch a lot more of the sort of the model building how-to videos.
What's the future for your channel and where would you like it to go next?
I suspect my channel just plod along at the same way it is now. I don't really have any plan for it.
Do you think you'll get the same enjoyment out of it in, say, 3 years' time?
I think it will come to a point where I will just stop doing it, personally. I think that time will come. Me wanting to hang out with my mates overrides the filming aspect of it, and I just won't get any enjoyment out of the filming bit, rushing around all over the place, I need to get this shot sort of thing. But at the end of the day, the social aspect for me is always going to be the number one. So I do see finite time left on the channel. I don't say it's going to be anytime soon, but it will end at some point, I imagine.
Can I put a request in now? Which is that, could your final video be Train Crashing 2? If it does come to that.
Train Crashing 2, 4K.
Mm-hmm.
Finn.
Well, really, where I'd like the channel to go next, I just like it to keep on steadily growing as it is. I mean, that's why I set out to do it, and it's just basically to provide enjoyment for other people and share my pleasure in the hobby.
Adam, Callum, thank you so much for coming on the show. I wish all the best in the future for your channels.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
See you again soon.
Thanks again to the guys for coming on the podcast. I hope it was an interesting insight into this growing and evolving community. I have a mini announcement in that the Railway Mania shop is developing more stock. At the time of recording, I am adding more Art Deco style posters to the store. You will soon be able to buy items for modellers as well as the Portbury pin badges. All profits from pin purchases help preserve Portbury, as they are going to be donated to the upkeep of the stock on the Bristol Harbour Railway, so why not buy a badge and support this unusual line? Take a look at the shop at railwaymania.net. Thank you again for listening. More podcasts on the way soon.